Hey y'all, you've reached Little Talks Podcast, where we ponder and discuss our insights about daily life. I'm Tiffany.
And I'm Amanda. Keep on keeping on after the beat.
Hey y'all, welcome back. In this episode, we're going to be talking about productivity and how we can get productive from being unproductive.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand why it is that we're unproductive before just trying to force ourselves to get things done, because I feel like there's always an underlying reason why you're not letting yourself get the things done that you know that you should or need to get done. So we're probably going to start with that.
So yeah, so the first question that we're going to ask is, why are we so unproductive? And we came up with a couple of reasons why we are just stuck and can't get started with something. One of the big, I think for everybody really, reasons why we're stuck and we just can't get motivated to just start is procrastination. I'm pretty sure you, me, your mom, your grandma, everybody procrastinates doing something.
Yeah, procrastination is an interesting problem, because it's not even that you're saying you're not going to do something, which I think a lot of the other reasons that we have for being unproductive exist. Procrastination is evil, because it's not that you're saying, oh, I'm not going to do this or I can't do this. It's, I'll do it later. And later is this magical time that doesn't exist. Later is never now. Later is not tomorrow. Later is not next week. Later is this weird, non-existent time in the distant future.
Yeah, it could be 5 minutes later, it could be 10 years later, it could just never happen. Like, you can procrastinate so long from doing something to the point in which, the point where you want to do it, sometimes it just doesn't seem right to get started anymore, or the time has passed so long that it's just like...
Yeah, you can procrastinate for so long that the goal that you originally had literally no longer exists.
Yeah, it's no longer relevant to where you are currently in time yourself.
Which is such a problem. Because how do you go about beating procrastination?
It's hard.
Yeah.
It is so hard. It kind of reminds me of, I think it was in Elizabeth Gilbert's Big Magic. I don't know if you've ever read that. She talks about not getting started with an idea. And for her, the whole thing of ideas and being creative is sort of like a spiritual thing almost. The way that she describes it, she can be pondering this idea. It's a great idea. It's like she wants to do this for like a book or whatever. And she'll just sit on it for so long that the idea would just leave her and then be implanted in somebody else.
Mm.
And then they will kind of manifest whatever she was thinking. It was a very interesting, like, thing that she was talking about.
Oh, that's interesting. I was going to say,
I think I'm getting completely off topic, but that's just, like, the first thought that came into my head in terms of procrastination, that you can just have this idea and then
that's what I was gonna
not
say.
Work on it, yeah. And then, like, lo and behold, you spend so much time procrastinating that somebody else developed that same idea that mm-hmm. you did.
Well, I think that's an interesting idea, mostly just because I think sometimes procrastination comes from, we're going to say the idea a lot.
Yeah.
So procrastination comes from having an idea and then just not acting on the idea. Because yeah. Sometimes ideas are wonderful. As somebody who writes, I love all of the ideas. They're so great. I can plan all of the things in the story, but if I don't actually write it, it doesn't matter, because it doesn't manifest into anything that is tangible. And at that point, what does it really matter that I had the idea in the first place? If you don't use something, then it's not fulfilling its purpose. So what is the point? And I think that's the issue, is that you have to figure out a way to circumvent or go around this idea of like, oh, I'll just do it later.
That it'll wait for you to get it done some other time, yeah.
Yeah, the world does not wait. Time is money. So, but we have tips, actually. We do have tips on how to beat procrastination they're actually really, really easy. But before we move on to those, we're going to go into some other reasons why we think that people are unproductive in the first place.
Yep. And so our next one is the fear of failure. And I can personally attest to this. Sometimes I don't get started doing something because I feel that it's not going to be good enough. And I honestly think that this comes from perfectionism and the idea that something has to be perfect. And obviously we live in an imperfect world, and so nothing's ever going to be perfect. But I think as perfectionists, we strive for that perfection. And sometimes I think it mostly happens when it's something that you really, really want to do, and you're just kind of stalled because you feel like whatever you produce is not going to be good enough.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that sometimes it's not just the fear of whatever you're doing not being good enough, per se, but that you have a very particular idea of what something should look like. So it's kind of like a, oh my god, I'm going to be such a lame-o and, like, quote philosophy. But, like, I think it was Plato and his ideal forms. Like, you have an ideal form of whatever your idea is, and you're like, this is what it should be in its finished product, and it's never going to be that, ever. Yeah. Because we're human, we're flawed, and all those things. But, so, when you, and even if something that you're working on is good, and it has the potential to be better. Because it's not exactly what you wanted it to be, all of a sudden, it might as well just be hot garbage. So,
it's like, we had a conversation, like, way back, mm-hmm. when we were actually in college, and we were talking about how now that we know what makes good writing, it's like everything we write is not going to be what we know makes good writing, mm-hmm. which isn't really... So it's not truth, but that's how just we process it. And again, I think it's because we're perfectionists, but yeah, it's like that. It's like how you, like, if you learn how something is supposed to be, everything that you attempt to do will never be how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I agree. I think you start to overthink, especially the more that you, I don't want to say are an expert at something, but the better skilled you are at analyzing something, the worse you are at feeling things through. I think that's one of the biggest issues with the creative process, even though that's, like, totally off topic, is that once you become a person who critiques the creative process, it becomes harder for you to just kind of feel your way through being creative. You're so caught up in the minutiae of just, is this the right word? Does my sentence flow? Is my dialogue garbage? That, like, you just...
Does my plot have holes? Yeah.
And it's so horrible because the reality of that situation is, even if it does, even if all that nonsense exists, that's what editing is for. And it's an excuse. It's a form of procrastination to make sure that you get in your own way, which is so tragic. It's so tragic. I also think that fear of failure is such a weird thing to, like, who defines what failure is? Like, what does that even really mean? It's this weird cloud that just, like, hangs over us, and this whole, like, I can't do it. How do you know if you don't try?
Yeah, it means different things for different people, I think. Mm. Just, like, success means different things for different people. But I think society has a definitive standard of what success and failure is. And I think that's where we get caught up in sometimes, is just what society thinks that we should do or strive for and so on. And it's a terrible trap to get caught in, because society is not always right, people.
And I mean, I don't like this whole, this is quote-unquote society. It's just like... You should just do your own thing. If it doesn't hurt anybody or yourself, then, you know, you do you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, even if it is hot garbage, you know, if you want to write hot garbage and you love it, forget what everybody else thinks.
Just write it. It might become, you know, it might become the next Twilight. You never know.
Or the next 50 Shades of Grey.
Hey!
Those people made money. You can do it too.
Yeah.
And which leads us to actually something that you were saying earlier was this whole fear which was our next point, by the way, fear of success, which, oh, that one hurts me so deeply, because I have both fear of failure and fear of success, which is just, it's a great, like, line to toe, where you're just like, I fail either way, like, it's horrible, no matter what you do.
I mean, I don't really get the whole fear of success, so you're gonna have to explain.
Yeah, no, like, of course, sure. See, the thing is, I think fear of success is one of those things that stems from comfort and knowing where you are and who you are as a person. So, for example, I am a person who writes. I have not accomplished writing a novel, but I know that, like, that's that goal that I'm seeking. Who am I once I accomplish that goal, though? I'm a completely different person. Do you know, like, at that point, okay, you're a person who has written a novel, and with that comes new expectations and new milestones and new goals that you have no idea how to deal with. But if you never take the step to finish your original goal, you know what that's like. You know what it's like to be that person that works really hard to write that novel, but it never gets done. And it's sucky because you do feel horrible the entire time that you are that person. But at the same time, there's a comfort in knowing what comes with being that person. Yeah. And you don't have that with the fear of who would I be after I've finished the things that I want to accomplish.
Huh. I never actually thought of that. Like, I never thought that far ahead. But I totally get it, because John Green actually had this problem. That's why it took him so long to write something after The Fault in Our Stars.
Turtles all the way down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it took him forever to write that book, because, especially since The Fault in Our Stars
did so well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It blew up. And mm-hmm. so it's like, oh my God, this is my success. He had trouble, like, trying to top it. Because, right, you know, I think people feel like, oh, like, you won the Grammy, so mm-hmm. now I have to go bigger.
Right.
You know, or something like that.
Or at least not downgrade.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why it took him so long to write Turtles All the Way Down.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that. So I never thought it for myself, or I never saw that myself, but I can totally understand now that you've explained it. Only because I've seen John Green through the Vlogbrothers, right, you know, struggle with writing his new novels after The Fault in Our Stars.
Right.
Because it just...
Because, you know, he had the success, and now where do you go from there? Exactly. Yeah. It's a fear of the unknown, really. That's really what fear of success is. It's a fear of the unknown. And...
Well, that's what fear of failure is, too, because you don't know if you're going to fail or not. Or is it different?
No, I mean, it's the same, but, like, in different ways. I think fear of failure is, I tried and I didn't succeed. And I think fear of success is, like, I tried, I did what I wanted to do, but, like, now people have expectations of me. Like, the expectations are so different.
Okay.
If you're an aspiring writer and you haven't written anything, everyone just like, whatever.
The expectations are low. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Or non-existent. Because, right, they don't even know you.
But you write a novel, and oh my God, everybody loves it. What do?
Gotta one-up that novel.
And it's not even just like, I mean, I can't imagine what people like J.K. Rowling, like, can you imagine? Harry Potter. The first Harry Potter. Oh my God, everybody loved it.
That's why she wrote that crime book under a different name.
Yeah, and it didn't do well. That's the other thing, too. Yeah. It didn't do well. And I feel like a lot more people read it after they found out that it was written by J.K. Rowling than before. And, I mean, that's fine. It's just, you know, it's just, like, what do you do after? And it's not even just that. It's just, like, that was the whole, like, this whole, like, for me, writing specifically, is a thing that I use to a certain extent, define me as, like, a person. Like, this is the thing that I am doing. And what happens to you once you do that thing? I have nothing after that. Like, I have no idea what the next big thing for me is. I do know what it is while I'm still trying to achieve it, though. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
Yeah, being neurotic pays off.
Does this segue into our last reason why we can be unproductive, which is intimidation or, like, overwhelmed? Because I'm pretty sure all of those emotions
cause, like, you to feel
so overwhelmed
and intimidated, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. To just even get started. So it's sort of like a vicious cycle almost.
Oh, it is. Very much so. And it's interesting because I think a lot of the time, it depends, every goal is different and every person is different. Everyone's goals are different, but I think a lot of the times people feel intimidated just because it means so much to them. Like, there's a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You only feel this way when it's something that you really are passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
It's never something that you are just kind of, like, lackluster.
Yeah. And I think also that when it's something that is that close and dear to you, and, you know, something that feels so monumental and so big, I think sometimes the issue is, well, how do I even start doing this thing that I really want to do? Like, if you want to write a book, oh my god, that's like a quadrillion pages. I have to write a quadrillion words. How do I even go about starting to do that? Oh my god, I want to start a YouTube channel. What camera do I get? Like, how do people even edit film things? And it can get into, like, oh my god, how?
You just kind of fall down the rabbit hole of, how do you do things? What am I supposed to do now? Where do I go? Like, yeah.
Yeah. And it stops you from doing those things, and then we circle back to procrastination.
Yep, vicious cycle.
So
what's the solution to this? Well, we think you should just get started.
Just start.
Nike, just do it. Like,
oh yeah, I was going to reference that Shia LaBeouf thing that, yes, I absolutely adore. Well, how does it? Just do it. it's literally just that simple. You just do it, and it's not. I mean, I know that that's oversimplifying it for sure. There are techniques which we will, you know, talk about in like 5 seconds about how to just get started. But I think, yeah,
it's that's just it. Yeah,
just get started. For example, so like if you're intimidated, right? We were talking about this before we even started recording, but like, if you're intimidated by something, because it's, you know, again, like, I want to write a book. How do I do that? Well, other than the fact that there are things like NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, or, you know, YouTube channels that exist about people who literally are just sharing their writing journeys and stuff like that, you can literally just take the big picture. It's a book. What makes up a book? Chapters and scenes and all those things. Break it down into smaller sections. Break it down into smaller goals. Find some, you know, steps to get you to that bigger goal.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's easier to do the smaller things. It's like when you have to clean your room. You're not going to... If your room is a complete mess, you don't...
Clean just, everything all at once. No, yeah. You start with, like, make your bed first. And then maybe I'll clean off my desk. You start it doing it in little... bite-sized chunks.
Exactly. Little areas, little sections that make sense to you, and that's fine. And then I think the other thing, too, about just getting started is, like, sometimes you just don't have the motivation to pull yourself out of the rabbit hole that is all of these negative things that cause this procrastination. And I think at that point, you can fall back into what people call the 5-minute rule, which is a legitimate thing that somebody somewhere... I swear, I really should look this stuff up before I mention these things in a podcast. But that someone somewhere came up with that's just like, okay, if a task seems really daunting, just make yourself do it for 5 minutes. At the very least. Because I think everyone can look at 5 minutes and be like, okay, if I can't do this, I have the attention span of a freaking goldfish. I should be able to do one thing for at least 5 minutes. And so, you know, you get started and you do your 5 minutes. And it's interesting because it at that point, sometimes, and I think this is rare for most people, you stop after the 5 minutes and like, okay, I did my time, goodbye. But a lot of the times, for most people, what happens is you keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're just like, oh, that wasn't that bad.
But yeah, I've heard I don't remember who came up with that 5-minute rule,
mm-hmm.
but you hear it a lot in the art community. Like, just, like, people... They sort of make excuses about why they don't sit down and draw or paint or whatever. And a lot of the times it's because they don't have time during their day or whatever. You have to make time to do that. And so everyone suggests, well, just take 5 minutes. Just take 5 minutes out of your day and sit down and work in your art journal or work on the drawing that you're working on or work on the painting. And then you would essentially create a habit if you keep it in the back of your mind to take 5 minutes out of each day. And for the most part, when people do that, it kind of builds the habit and it kind of extends the 5 minutes. Sometimes they're so into it that they spend 10 minutes on it, or the next day they'll spend 20 minutes on it. And that just kind of gets you started.
And I think, I mean, some people, I think it's cool that you mentioned, like, that artists do that, and that it can kind of grow into something else. I mean, if you think about it, I've read this article / book somewhere at some point about women authors in, like, during Victorian England. I was a lit major, for those of you who are wondering why I have to mention so much literature. And, you know, it was interesting because it was a lot of things like, well, men were paid to write, and so they made that their careers, and they had the time to do that. Women writers during that time, that was not what their job in the world / society / anything was about. And so women like Charlotte Bronte and Jane Austen and that chick who wrote under that dude's name that I can't remember off the top of my head right now.
There's somebody who wrote off a dude's name?
Yeah, George Eliot. Was a chick.
Really?
Yeah, huh.
Oh.
I love how when I have to explain this, I remember it. They all wrote in between everyday things. It was 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, back to piano lessons, back to doing girly things, and then, oh, I have 5 minutes before bed. And they wrote novels that were super successful and that everybody reads till this day because they're awesome and are masterpieces. So, you know, just putting in that small amount of time and just making sure that you're starting no matter what will eventually get you to that place that you want to be at.
So that leads into our next point is momentum. When you actually start doing things on a small scale, you will find that it takes you longer than the 5 minutes because you're so into it. It's sort of like the hard part is getting started. And so you just kind of have to push yourself to get started, because once you get started, it's just, you keep going. I know I struggle with the whole getting started bit. Like, it'll take me a while to start something, start a new project or continue working on something that I not abandoned, but like kept off doing for a while. But like, once I sit down and start working on it, I find that I like spend 5+ hours doing the thing, and it's like you lose track of time sometimes, especially if you have all the time in the world to work on something. You sort of like just lose your sense of time, and by the time you know it, you're like, oh my god, I was here for 6 hours. So it's sort of like getting started, you build this momentum to keep going.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know. This issue reminds me of going to work, because I don't mind being at work, but I really hate leaving my house to get to work. So
yeah, I am like that too.
Yeah. So to me, the problem is not doing the actual work. To me, the problem is starting the process for getting to work. So it's interesting. It's really just taking the first step. The first step is always the hardest step. And once that's done, it's I'm not saying it's easy, but it's much easier than what you would think. And, I mean, yeah, if I'm going to continue being lame, which I might probably as well. yeah, I was going to get into Newton's laws of motion, which are very good, like, analogy for just getting stuff done, because he says, you know, an object in motion stays in motion. So, like, the more you start getting things done, like you said, with habits, the more you start getting stuff done, the more you're in the habit of continuing to do things. And an object at rest stays at rest. If you are stagnant, it's going to be 1,000 times harder to start getting work done, even if it's not even the same kind of work. If you're just in a flow of productivity, it's easier for that to spread to all facets of your life, other than I sit around and do nothing other than, you know, watch television. It's going to be hard for you to do anything at that point, because if that's all you do, going to the gym is going to take too much energy. Starting a new project is going to take too much energy. Everything is going to be too much for you. So it really is, like, just take the first step and let that first step propel you into the next step and the next step and the next step. But yeah, so since we've already started talking about how to start being productive, I think the next step is to talk about how to continue to stay productive. And one of the things that I put down, just because I use it all the time with myself and my students, is the Pomodoro method, which I know that you don't really use.
Yeah, I don't really use it. I don't know much about it. I know, like, I guess the overall idea of it, but I haven't actually looked into it deeply.
Yeah, okay, so the Pomodoro method is just, it's really, it comes from a thing called the Pomodoro timer, which is basically just a little tomato-shaped timer that is used for cooking, I believe. And it's literally, I think, 20, 25 minutes tops that the little timer allows for. And it's basically the idea that you work for those 20 to 25 minutes and then give yourself a 5-minute break before doing that again. And the idea is that you, as a human being, are only really able to focus on something deeply for so long before your attention starts and motivation starts to fray. And so what you're doing is you're taking advantage of the peak moments of motivation, which happen during the first 20 to 25 minutes, before taking a rest and then resetting. You know, and then there's, like, rules about, you know, after you do that for about 4 stints, so it's, like, 20 minutes, 5-minute break, 20 minutes, 5-minute break, 20 minutes, 5-minute break, and then on the fourth one you get a longer break, and then you start over. And I just think it's kind of an extension of that 5-minute rule. So once you get through that 5-minute rule, extend those 5 minutes. So the next time that you're doing something, don't, you know, take the easy way out. Don't be a pansy. And don't do just 5 minutes, you know, do something like, oh, maybe this time I'll do 20 minutes and, you know, I'll just do this one thing for 20 minutes instead. And I think there are a lot of apps too that are just super useful for that. There's a bunch of Pomodoro, like if you literally just type in Pomodoro into whatever phone you have, they will give you something. But the one that I use is Forest because it's adorably cute. And it has little trees that grow for the time that
You spend doing something.
Yeah, and if you, and the best thing about it too is that it blocks your phone from any other apps, so it really makes sure.
Oh, that you stay on focus.
Yeah, and cool. The best part too is if you do try to do anything on your phone during that time, the tree dies. Oh, so no. You have an emotional incentive not to
kill it.
Yeah, and the best part is, and this is really funny. Okay. So I also use the Pomodoro method with my students, literally as young as 8 or 9 years old, because I have some students that just, they're going through a thing, and sometimes they're just not able to focus for that long, so I have them do 20 minutes, 5-minute break, 20 minutes, 5-minute break, etc. And I was having a hard time with my writing recently, and I was like, listen, if you can make a 9-year-old do this Pomodoro method thing, you should have no problem, and that was great incentive for me to start doing it. So I started using the Pomodoro method for my writing, but because I had been so unproductive, I didn't want to do a full, I don't remember if it was 20 or if it was 25 minutes. So I think I shrunk it down to like by a 5-minute interval. So it ended up being 15 or 20. And hysterically, when you do that, instead of a tree, they give you a shrub.
Oh no.
And I was like, oh, no, 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 I'm not going to be a punk. I want the tree. So that, too, was great incentive to make sure that I did the higher increment rather than the lower one. So I just think that these small things are such great ways to, you know, motivate yourself to get something done and to stay productive, because it's cute and it's, you know, you form like an attachment to the little tree.
It's like keeping a Tamagotchi alive.
Yeah.
Sort of. I will definitely leave a link down below to this app in the show notes so you can go find it too. So the next bit, and I guess it all kind of segues into each other, is that in order to stay productive is just to create a habit and to continue on with that habit. And I think that just kind of forms naturally when you get started, especially if you start doing stuff 5 minutes at a time. You'll notice that if you take 5 minutes out of each day, you'll notice that you would create that habit of mm-hmm. spending 5 minutes doing whatever it is that you said you wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I think it was what did you say? Like after 21 days?
Yeah, yeah. The Power of Habit, which is a book. It's like a self-help book. I'm sorry. Personal development book says that it takes about 21 days to really create a habit.
So if you keep doing something 5 minutes each day after 21 days, it's, you just, like the 22nd day, it's just going to come naturally to you. It's just going to be ingrained into your routine. And so it'll be easy for you just to keep going. And then you'll find that you will extend those 5 minutes, depending what it is that you're doing. If it's something that you really love to do,
yeah,
you'll notice that you'll like maybe take 10 minutes out of your day, or you will allot 15 minutes out of your day, or you'll lose track of time and you can just keep going. But yeah, creating habits. And I know creating a habit is very hard. It mm-hmm. is definitely very hard.
For sure.
But there are tons of ways that you can create a habit. And one of them that we wanted to share with you is doing challenges. So there are tons of challenges online that you can do constantly, especially if you are very big into Instagram.
Or Tumblr.
Or Tumblr, yeah. There's always somebody somewhere doing some sort of challenge. If it's like a writing challenge, like the month of November is NaNoWriMo.
Camp NaNoWriMo is about to come up, by the way.
Oh, yeah. In April is Camp NaNoWriMo.
Happens twice in the summer, actually. They have two camps.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
Do they have one in July, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have NaNoWriMo that happens three times.
Like, a year.
A year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically taking a whole month to write 50,000 words novel, really.
Yeah, I mean, like, Camp NaNoWriMo is easier just because you can set your own word goals.
Okay.
It's, yeah, it's much more manageable. But yeah.
But yeah, the whole idea is to get yourself to write every day so that at the end of the month you will have a substantial novel,
right,
or like a beginning of a novel, or just something.
A draft.
Yeah, something substantial though, you know?
Yeah.
Like big and tangible and yummy thing, you know? So that's like something that you can do. And like you said, Camp NaNoWriMo starts in April.
April. Mm-hmm.
So April.
Check that out, actually. If you are an aspiring writer, even if you're not, if you've ever thought that you had a great story idea, it's not just the challenge itself, but there's also a really great community that NaNoWriMo has created. Like, they put you in cabins for Camp NaNoWriMo, so you have, like, a quote-unquote group of people that you, and you can customize your cabin however you want. It could be random. It could be, you know, we have the same word goal, or we have the same genre that we're writing in, or whatever it is. And you meet writing friends, which, honestly, if you're interweb type people, maybe your, you know, in life friends don't necessarily have the same interests as you. That's a great place to find people that have the same hobbies that you do.
And that's also accountability. When you have a group of people to keep you accountable into doing your habit, into creating your habit, into doing these goals. That's also another topic that we also wanted to talk about was accountability. But before we get to accountability, there are other challenges. There's another one that's starting in April.
Also in April.
And it's called the 100-Day Challenge, which primarily is on Instagram, I believe. And this is when you take 100 days to do something that you wanted to get done. So in the past, there have been people who I follow on Instagram who did 100 days of contour drawing, or 100 days of painting. Usually it's sort of like an art thing, but it could be 100 days of writing poems. It could be 100 days of exercising.
It's actually really funny that she says that, because I think I mentioned this in our welcome to the podcast thing, whether that I'm really into like study related stuff. So like study Instagram, study YouTube, stuff like that. The number of people that do the 100-day challenge for studying, it's like literally just like, they'll just do pictures every day of, like, this is what I'm studying today. I want to make sure that I'm on top of my notes. I want to make sure that I'm studying every single day for all of my classes instead of just, you know, procrastinating and studying the night before the exam.
So, yeah, you can basically set your whatever 100-day challenge is, but the point is to do it every single day for 100 days.
Yeah.
And after the 100 days, you can end your challenge, like you don't have to continue, or if it's something that you wanted to create a habit out of, it's so much easier just to continue it, because after 100 days you will essentially ingrain that into your routine and you would create the habit.
I think it's also really important to note that it does not, these challenges or whatever, they, you do not need to do them while they are happening. There is no reason why you can't just decide that you're going to do something like NaNoWriMo not in November, not in April, not in July. There's no reason why you can't start your own 100-day challenge not during, not in April. Like, these are just jumping off points. These are just the just get started. This is just, you know, and I think they're there to remind you, yeah, you should just get started. But you can do that at any point. This is not, it's not like New Year's where you're just like, it's New Year's. This is the time. No. Any time is the time to start.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can just do it whenever. But I think the advantages of doing it when everyone else is doing it is the accountability. And so this is the next point that we wanted to make is, and so what accountability is, because I don't think most, I mean, I think most people don't really understand it, is you have something or someone there to, I'm going to use the word, keep you accountable, make sure that you do what it is that you said that you were going to do.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, I know for me, I want to do all these things and I say, oh yeah, I'm totally going to do this or I'm totally going to do that. And then I find out that I don't end up doing it. But it's okay because it's for me. It's not for somebody else. There's nobody there. Like,
you're not letting anybody down by not getting it done.
Nobody's checking up on me saying, hey, did you do this? You know, there's nobody there. And so it's a lot harder to get whatever it is that you want to do done. But when you have somebody that's relying on you to get something done, it's a lot different because it makes you, it gets you motivated to do that thing and get it done. So I'm in an art journal community. It's called Get Messy Art Journal. And I did a thing where I wanted to go through a class and I kind of posted on the message board saying, hey, does anybody have this class and do you want to work on it together? Because I knew that the only way that I was going to get through this class is if I had somebody there to do it with me and to keep me accountable. And so what we did was we dedicated every Monday to sharing our art journal pages that we made from taking this class. So that that day really of sharing what we made motivated us to make something so that we had something to share that Monday. Because you don't want to feel like the odd one out when you don't have anything to share because you didn't do what you were supposed to do to share it with those other people. And like, it sort of makes you feel bad. It's kind of like killing the tree, you know, like you don't want to kill the tree. So you kind of want to make stuff. So that is what accountability is. That's.
Yeah. I also wanted to put out there though, that you don't necessarily need other people to have a method of accountability. I think that's why people sometimes turn to habit trackers.
Yes.
Is because you may not necessarily have a person to keep you accountable, but having a tangible and physical piece of something that shows you, holy crud, these are all the days that I didn't do this thing. What the heck have I been doing with my life? Or like, and I think this is the better, and that's like negative reinforcement, but like, I think the better version of it is when you start seeing how many things you're checking off, like every single day. And I know that this sounds kind of like cheesy and or like contrived or fake or whatever, but it's 100% true that there is a feeling of such gratification when you're on a streak of getting something done every single day, and it pushes you to continue that streak.
You're self-motivating yourself just by keeping that habit tracker.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think, you know, if you don't have an accountability partner, which I think is great to have 100%, I actually prefer accountability partners to habit trackers personally, but if you don't have somebody to hold you accountable, then you can definitely start doing that yourself. And while I know that the bullet journal community and the planner community absolutely loves to put habit trackers inside of their planners and their bujos and all that stuff, I am going to tell you that you should print one out and you should tape it onto a wall that you look at every single day so that every single day you are reminded that you have done or not done that thing. Because I've tried that method of habit tracking and honestly, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, because you do it on a page and then you continue working on the following pages and you don't look back.
Yeah.
Who looks back? No one looks back at like what they've done in a planner. You know, no one looks back. Having it right, like when you wake up in the morning and you see it, like that is what you need to like keep yourself accountable.
Yeah. I also think that there are other ways to keep yourself accountable that are kind of ridiculous, but are when they work. I'm telling you right now that they work. The first one is, and this is for people who maybe the habit tracker isn't working, maybe they don't have an accountability partner, go outside to be productive. 100%. Have you noticed that if you're at a cafe and you bring your laptop and other people are doing work, you are more motivated to do work? Because you don't want to be the only person sitting there not doing work. Yeah. You don't want to look bad to these complete strangers. And even if they're not even looking at you, it's just this hysterical ego issue where it's just like, I don't want to be the one that looks like I'm not doing anything in comparison to all these people. I don't want to be the bum in the crowd.
You want to feel productive like everybody else.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's one way. The other way, and I recently dabbled with this one too, is to, and I did this on my computer, is to record myself while I am doing a task that I really don't want to do. This was about a month ago. I started doing like a little video clip of me being like, so this is what I'm going to do for writing today. This is the idea. Hopefully it gets done. And then literally filming myself writing for the next half hour. Because I want to be able to, at the end, be like, yes, I either accomplished this thing or I didn't. And because it's filmed, and it's kind of like when you have a journal, I don't know if people do this, where sometimes you get subconscious of like, what if someone opens my journal? It must be written in such a way so that I sound smart and people, you know, it's kind of the same thing, except through video, which I think is even worse because there's no faking that. They can physically see you not being productive if you're filming yourself. So that's another way, I think, that you can hold yourself accountable without necessarily having somebody else
be there to be your accountability. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Did not think of that one.
So, yeah, I think
that's about it.
I think that concludes all the things that we actually had to talk about. But, you know, I think if we're going to leave you with something, just take advantage of those things. You know what I mean? If you've been in a rut and you're like, what do? I've been so stagnant. I feel like crap. I don't know what to do. Take advantage of small things. Just start. Somewhere. Doesn't matter where. Just
anywhere.
Start. And then after that, if you want to fine-tune the starting or the continuous motion, use some of the things that we said. Maybe look up your own
productive way, productivity.
Yeah. Tweak some of this stuff to fit yourself. Like, I mean, I haven't seen anybody else talk about this whole, I record myself because
yeah, I don't want to feel bad. Heard that, yeah.
Yeah, I just started doing it because I was just like, oh, I would never film a YouTube video because I am super awkward on film. But, you know, still, I think you see other people on, like, a lot of people on YouTube do these study with me's where they're literally, like, it's 45 minutes of a person just scrawling, like,
studying
in a notebook. And you're just like, I would not watch this ever. But some people put it on to be like, they're doing it, I can do it too, and you study at the same time as those people. By the way, another accountability partner that doesn't know you exist, but still.
I know a lot of art journalists who do that. They watch an art journaling or journal with me video while they themselves art journal. Like, it's I'm assuming that there are people out there who also plan with me. You know, they plan while watch the plan with me. I don't know.
That's hysterical because I totally do that.
But I scrapbook a lot, and what I really love to do when I'm scrapbooking is generally listen to a scrapbooking podcast, or I watch someone else scrapbooking on YouTube, and I do my own thing while they're scrapbooking. It's just, you know, having somebody there to do it with you, even if it's just a YouTube video, it just, like, it plays with your mind, you know? It's like, oh, I'm working with somebody, and it just makes you want to do the thing, you know?
I think that's the other thing, too. Sometimes I think we can feel like, we can feel very alone in trying to get our things done. I know for me, a lot of the hobbies that I have are very solitary hobbies. You don't read with other people. I mean, I guess you can if you have a kid, but, you know, you don't read with other people. You don't write with other people. It's all very in a closed room by yourself with no distractions kind of thing. And it can feel very isolating and very, it can put you kind of like in a negative place, even if you are being productive. And I think doing those sorts of things makes you feel a little bit less alone and a lot more likely to just continue doing that thing.
So yeah, we hope that this advice, these tips, these little tricks really help you to not only start being productive, but keep going and being productive and creating habits and being motivated to continue on with those habits.
Yeah, and you know, really take advantage of especially those challenges that are coming up in April, because they're so close. And if you've been sitting on something that you've always wanted to do, why not, you know?
You're not going to hurt anybody just to start, you know? You would only be hurting yourself, I think.
Yeah, don't ask why, ask why not.
Yeah.
I hope you guys enjoyed our first real legit episode of Little Talks. And we'll have links for you guys on a lot of the things that we've talked about. Habit trackers for you to, you know, print so that you can have that on your wall. A link to the Instagram challenge.
Yeah, a link to the 100-day challenge, a link to Camp NaNoWriMo, and to anything else that we mentioned, like the app, the Pomodoro app, and all those things. They will be in the show notes, which you can find at our website. It's basically ariellovely.com/podcast.
And we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Until then, keep on keeping on.